You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you're listening to podcasts to get the latest episodes. The Heat wrap up their preseason with a big win over the Toronto Raptors in Tampa on Friday night, and two players in particular stood out. I'll break down what made their game so special, but of course, that led to some house cleaning on part of Miami's roster. They needed to make some moves, and so unfortunately, a few players have been waived. Brian Taylor, Paul Ebua, and BJ Johnson are no longer with the Heat. We're not sure what their futures are. Other players being waived around the league. It's possible Miami could be scouring the waiver wire in order to acquire a player, maybe sign him to a two-way deal. You know, Miami always looking to find a way to improve their roster. A couple things that stood out. Again, it's a 117-105 victory over the Raptors. It's a preseason game. No Jimmy. A couple other players sat out. Unfortunately, Mo Harkless did not sit out. He played 17 minutes, struggled again from the field, 1 of 5, 0 of 4 from three-point range. Just cannot seem to find a groove defensively or offensively. And so there are legitimate questions about whether or not he starts off making any kind of significant impact as a starter, as a rotation player. I don't know. You expect that he'll be able to kick it up to a certain level, that he'll find a way to eventually come around. He's an established NBA vet. I'm not sure why he's out of sorts. He just has not been able to find a way to be a consistent player yet. And given Miami's experience and trust in veterans, they'll probably continue to give him a little bit of leeway. But he's got to do something. He's got to do something a little bit more positively. Because right now, again, through two preseason games, obviously struggling offensively, struggling defensively. The matchup against Zion Williamson was not one in his favor. Maybe Jay Crowder could have handled it a little bit better, but I'm not sure there was anybody else in Miami's roster, and so it might be necessary to find a power forward type who could play and switch and shoot the ball. I don't know that there are those players available. I saw Frank Kaminsky, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Those two players have been waived by their respective teams, and so perhaps they are options. I don't know. At least in Kaminsky's case, we know he's a better shooter than Harkless is, much more consistent from three-point range. We'll have to wait and see what happens there because there are concerns. There is, however, some good news. So I got that out of the way. Harkless struggling from the field. Precious Achiuwa continues to have a strong showing. It looks like he's mobile, good chemistry, particularly with one Goran Dragic, who got his first taste of the preseason. 19 limited minutes for him. 1 of 3 from the floor. 6 total points. 4 of 5 from the free throw line. So it wasn't like he was trying to put his imprint on there. But as far as any concerns regarding his health, that's all done with. Spoelstra has talked in recent media sessions about how the Heat practices are more intense than whatever Friday's game represented. So he wasn't too worried about the level of conditioning from any of their players. Everybody's been able to do the work. He has been slowly ramping up, mixing in intense practices with days off. So I think it's kind of part of what we'll see over the course of the regular season, given the compressed nature of the schedule. You're going to be ramping it up. You're going to be tying it down. You're going to be relaxing on occasion, finding ways to balance it, even with you as a Heat team, trying to continue to push players as much as you possibly can. So Spoelstra clearly having to make adjustments, players having to do the same as well, but at least Goran for one night, so good to see him out here. Given what happened during the Orlando bubble, I had legitimate concerns about whether or not he might be forced to retire. Luckily, he re-signed with the team. He looks like he's in great shape. He's been doing all the work necessary. It's good to see him out there from a personal perspective and also just from a team perspective. He's going to add a lot of stability and chemistry, and it looks like he's probably going to continue to come off the bench, which is the right move given where he is in his career and how much of a stabilizing factor he is. He can play with guys like Achiuwa. He can play with guys like Harkless or Myers Leonard or whoever you have coming off the bench. We're not quite sure. One guy who's making a strong case, however, to get some more significant minutes, KZ Opala. He was probably the biggest story of the game. Not to me. I know I've been a little down on Opala. I just have not seen enough, and I know that they've invested a lot of time as an organization and a lot of resources and, you know, of course, sacrificing a second-round pick in order to draft him a couple seasons ago. But while fans have been looking to KZ Okpala as a savior and some people have been hyping him up as such, there hasn't been enough to really warrant that, not in my opinion. But I'll tell you what, he had a pretty strong showing. Got a start against Toronto, finishing 34 minutes, 9 of 15 from the field, 24 total points, including 6 of 10 shooting from three-point range. So that has been absolutely phenomenal. I'm not sure that there's any one thing that stood out. I have had legitimate questions, I think, about his quickness. He seems to be, maybe not quickness, speed rather. He does not always seem like he is the fastest guy on the floor. He does have good reaction time. He has excellent length also, especially defensively, so he can intercept passes and recover quickly when somebody breaks him down off the dribble. But he's also lacked some polish offensively. That's clearly been the focus. He spoke about that post-game, that he's needed to do the work offensively to kind of show that he has some range and that he can put the ball down on the floor. Something we knew he could do at Stanford and has done throughout his whole playing career. At the NBA level, that's a whole other thing. And KZ has shown it, or at least showed it against Toronto. And this was against starters, too. He was playing against Pascal Siakam, against, you know, Kyle Lowry, against OG Anunoby. Really, really solid defenders all around. Fred VanVleet. And he was out there doing everything he needed to do, dominating, quite frankly. He had 24 points, leading all scorers there. I'm sorry, leading all Heat scorers. Lowry had 25. But still, for Okpala, he just seems like he connected a little bit, like something all has tied together with him. And I know it's hard to say because I'm not watching the practices as much as I used to. I'm not seeing the work that he's put in. And players have not really spoken about KZ necessarily. Spoelstra has talked about him somewhat, recognizing that KZ needed to find a way to stand out this preseason. Friday's game certainly was an indicator of that. I think he started because, well, you don't have much else. You don't have Jimmy Butler. You don't have Myers Leonard yet. I think Spoelstra is still playing his cards close to the vest. We're not quite sure exactly what he intends to do with the rotation and starting lineup. My feeling is still that Myers is going to be in the starting rotation at some point, even though he hasn't gotten a lot of playing time during the preseason. As far as Okpala is concerned, I think that He looked really good. He looked really engaged. He looked really focused. His first shot was a corner three where they kicked the ball out to him. To me, what really has stood out as far as his offensive improvement, his shot looks much more fluid. He looks like an NBA-ready shooter. He has a length, obviously, but he was able to really bring the ball in, move the ball from his catch position right at the hip, swing it upwards. Nice fluid motion, no hitch in his shot, and had a nice high arcing release. It just looked like a really good solid shot. He set his feet. You could see it. You go to NBA stats site, you can watch the video of him, which I did, and every shot looked really, really good. He was composed, set his feet, was a long fluid process, and I think that's the work that we're starting to recognize on the floor, that he's able to confidently shoot the ball that well because he's done the work. It kind of feeds itself, the confidence, etc. And you know that he's been doing the work as far as getting more shots up, getting into a comfortable rhythm. And I'm curious to see what happens next. I know it's fashionable. It's nice to say that he's going to be an impact player. It's very rare that second round players make that kind of leap, but we'll see what happens. As far as Okpala is concerned, he does have potential. Defensively, he looked really good. He had one series in particular. After that one made three, he went and recovered on the other end defensively and forced Pascal Siakam into a really bad shot. You know, Siakam maybe still hasn't recovered from his poor performances in the Orlando bubble. That's a whole other story. But Okpala, he does have the size. He does have the length. He does have the tenacity. I think he'd be a solid two-way player. I wouldn't be opposed to him being a starter alongside Bam Adebayo, but my feeling is that while that's a much more dynamic lineup, it's also one that's going to be putting a lot of pressure on Bam to guard bigger fives and fours. And that's just, you don't want to put him through the ringer that much. That's why you have a bigger body like Myers. That's why you resign him. If not, and I'm not so sure exactly why you bring him back at that hefty price tag. And, you know, I know it's part of being a cultural bellwether. He's a guy who's part of the Heat system and the way of doing things. And I understand that he fit very well in his one season here, but I have legitimate concerns that if you're going to bring him back, that you're not going to play him if you're paying him that much. But the positives here, Okpala looks really good. I think the Heat looked really solid. They look really fluid. They've shown some improvements. As far as the regular starters, Duncan, you know, that looked great. He looked solid. He wasn't looking to get his shot going. I will say this. Now, you know what? I'll save it for an upcoming episode. I have concerns about Tyler Hero because I think he's looked pretty solid overall. But as a starter, there was something that stood out to me, and I think I'll talk about that in an upcoming show. I'll also be talking a little bit about Kelly Olynyk in an upcoming show because he'll be on the show, and he'll be a guest of the Locked On Heat podcast, so make sure you stay tuned to that. But I'll be also talking about one of the top performers from Friday's win, Max Strus, before going deeper into how Miami continues to develop players. So stay here on the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and analysis. Look, at some point in the day, it's just going to happen. You're bound to hit a wall. Mine usually hits me in the early evening. Like I've said before, my son is a handful. He just turned 2 years old. But whatever your wall is, whenever it hits, Built Go is a solution for you. It's a healthy replacement of energy drinks, but without any of the fake additives, just natural ingredients that last. It comes in 1.5-ounce packages that are easy to carry whenever your wall hits you at a meeting at work or to power through a workout. Just put it in your pocket and get through your day. It's the best workout gel on the market, and it comes in 3 delicious flavors. Peanut butter honey is my favorite. Chocolate mint is my wife's favorite. Chocolate coconut is also good. How does Built Go work so well? Well, it combines energy gel with collagen protein that gets absorbed in your system quickly using vitamins, nutrients, honey, and just a kick of caffeine to keep you going strong while strengthening joints, soft tissues, hair, and skin so you feel good and you look good too. Visit BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. So use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. Betting on the NBA doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, you get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. So I have never been so proud of my one semester taking German because I knew exactly how to pronounce Max Strus's last name. I had been talking about Strus before. Obviously, a player that not a lot of people had heard of. I had some expectations for him being able to find a way to stand out. He really struggled in the first preseason game, made me look stupid. Well, he bounced back pretty strong in the second game. I'll be honest with you. He had a huge game, 22 total points off the bench, 8 of 11 from the field. Oh, incredible. 6 of 8 from three-point range. We knew he could shoot. Well, that was on display there. We had seen some signs of it in that first preseason game. Maybe there were some jitters there. A lot of pressure. I mean, considering that he's facing the New Orleans Pelicans and trying to earn a berth in the NBA, it's not easy. That's a lot of pressure having to rise up to that challenge. And he did it. He really has done an incredible job this preseason, aside from that one blemish against the Pelicans. And I think a lot of, well, Eric Spoelstra's talked about him. And I think he brings a new dimension to this Heat team. And that's why earlier on Saturday, the Miami Heat announcing that they've converted Max Strus to a two-way contract. He will be part of the team. They waived Johnson, they waived Taylor, they waived Abua. So now their roster is set at 17, and it looks like Strus is going to be with the team for the rest of the season. The two-way deal doesn't mean what it used to be because there's no G League this season. So he'll be with the team pretty much full-time, practicing, getting the work in, and continuing to play. There won't be any 45-day restriction. He'll be part of this team moving forward, unless there's an unexpected waiver around the league where somebody, a big star player or a name player that might fit on Miami's radar a little bit better, could replace Strus. I think he's going to be a project that they're going to continue to work on and develop, and I think you can see why. The shooting was always there, you know, and I think that's important to recognize is that he was brought in as a shooter. He had that skill in DePaul University. He showed it during his brief stint with the Chicago Bulls G League team last season. He did get hurt right at a point where he said he was playing his best basketball. At least that's what he told media a couple days ago during his recent media session. He said that, you know, the injury came at a wrong time for him because he was just starting to build momentum and trying to prove that he was an NBA-worthy player. And then, of course, there was the hiatus and everything else that happened over the last, well, it feels like an eternity. And Strus, he looked really, really solid on Friday night. This is why I thought that coming in, the last position on the team would come down to either him or BJ Johnson. Sure enough, that's exactly how it worked out. Because when you have guys that have NBA experience at this level, they know what to do to stand out. They know how to put in the work, at least during these first couple of weeks of training camp, preseason, whatever you want to call it. And Strus has a specific skill that really makes him stand out. There was a quote that the Heat broadcast talked about during halftime of Friday night's game. It's something that Spo has said a number of times. Make me watch you. Make me play you. And I think for Strus, that's the shooting. For BJ Johnson, he didn't get any playing time. There wasn't anything that really stands out there as far as a dominant skill. And given that, there's no real justification for playing him a significant amount of time there. So with the NBA experience, however, I thought it was a factor with Johnson. I thought he'd find a way, maybe as a quicker player, he could find a way to stand out or maybe contribute some defensive tenacity, but it didn't stand out enough for Eric Spoelstra, I guess, which is why he was ultimately waived. But Strus bouncing back, that takes some courage there. I think, again, the pressure, having to showcase what skills you have during that first game and then being able to bounce back from a clear struggle night and then find a way to just not perform well, but really, really damn well, where you're knocking the ball down. And those shots, let me tell you, as smooth as Okpala looked as a shooter, Strus was even better than that. That's his natural skill, I think. That's something that he's put in the work for, and you could tell. Like, some of those shots were from well beyond the three-point line. And so I'm just excited to see whether or not he'll be able to contribute. If not this season, the next. We're looking at another player similarly to a Gabe Vincent, similar to a Duncan Robinson, to a Wayne Ellington before that, Miami, finding a way of continuing to develop players. And that's something I'll talk about a little bit later in the show, because I think it's what makes this organization so solid and why you can depend on them. They're not just chasing big names like James Harden, although that's still apparently part of the process to building a team. You might still want to, they're still considering the James Harden deal. We've had a number of source reporters talking about that the Heat are still very much in those talks. We'll see what happens. ESPN, not really, ESPN and The Athletic, Shams and Woj, not respectively, but those two reporters have not broken any news about Miami. They're kind of keeping it, again, close to the vest. So I wonder whether or not they're not the front runners that some people expect them to be. We'll see. I know a lot of Heat fans have already said that some level of disrespect from Woj and Shams in particular. I don't see that. I think Woj in particular is closely relied on some source player or person within the front office for information in the past, and I think there's a strong relationship there. He's had Goran Dragic. He's had Eric Spoelstra on his podcast. I think he's tied to the organization in a way that most reporters are not. So my feeling is that he just has not shown what Miami may or may not have cooking. That's a whole other story. I mean, the Harden conversation, I'm a little tired of it. And I'll talk about this more as I'm previewing the season or getting ready for the first couple games, which right around the corner. I'm really high on this team. I think they've gotten better since last season. I don't think that the loss of Jay Crowder and Derek Jones Jr. is going to be a major blow. I think you stay strong to what you are as a team. And while you have concerns about health, as always, you've got a team that's hungry and ready to continue to push for a title. They got a taste of it last year in the NBA Finals. Not last year, last season. It's only been a couple months. And still something that is, I think, very difficult for a lot of NBA reporters to kind of wrap their mind around. Because there's no summer. It was just an off season. And it wasn't last year. It was just a couple of months ago. So as far as Strus is concerned, back to that, he just looked really good. The shooting looks good. He showed a little pop there. He was able to break out for a fast break opportunity and dunk the ball. So he's, at 6'5", good size. I think defensively he'll still need to find a way to improve and compete and show Eric Spoelstra that he's determined to continue to play at this level. Obviously that's going to stand out for Spo. But as long as you can shoot the ball as well as he did on Friday, you're going to have an opportunity in the league. So good to see him getting that chance. And hopefully some of the players that were waived will find some lessons out of this experience and continue to build on that because I just love to see guys find a way to succeed in the league. Some of the best stories are guys that find a way to stand out. Hopefully we'll be able to get a little bit more insight on what makes Max Strus tick. Again, I think he'll be sticking around with the team, and he should be able to continuing developing as part of this team. But what's the secret to Miami's development success? I'll get into that in the next segment here on Locked On Heat. Said before, early next week, I'll have Kelly Olynyk on the show to talk about the Orlando bubble, to preview the upcoming season. So make sure you get that episode by subscribing to the show. And just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Max Strus, Kazi Okpala, Duncan Robinson, etc., etc. It's been a hallmark of this team to find players and continue to get the best thing out of them. And that's such an incredible skill. I think Raptors fans can get a little defensive. That's, you know, they're Canadian. They've been largely ignored, or at least that's their feeling. They don't get the respect they think they deserve. They're not scheduled on Christmas Day. It's been a long time battle for them to get the kind of respect that they feel like they've been overlooked, not just as a franchise, but because they're in Canada. That's a joke, by the way. Just feel like, you know, Raptors fans think that they're very, very good at developing players. And sure, they've had success. Van Vliet, Anunoby, etc. There have been a number of players, Pascal Siakam, that really stand out. I like Miami's way of doing things as well. I think you can say both are really, really good at developing players. Miami, you know, they found a recipe to success. And I think, I like to think of it as an inverted pyramid with the wide base of the triangle at the top there, because in a macro sense, for me, what really helps set the bar for the Heat and for any player looking to succeed is the conditioning level. Like, we all joke about it. It's become kind of cliched to think about Miami Heat and Miami Heat culture and the grind and everything else. Well, guess what? If you're weighing 5 to 10 pounds heavier playing for the Minnesota Timberwolves because they don't want to push you, because they don't want to drive you, because you're not doing the work, then that matters. And I think you come into Heat camp and there are no shortcuts. You find a way to succeed. You get in the best shape of your life. And we've seen that time and time again, that there is a focus on improving your overall level of conditioning to get stronger, to get fitter, to get quicker. That has to be the first step to becoming the player that you're supposed to be. Like, that's just, it seems like commonsensical, but a lot of players, again, a lot of teams, you're trying to balance a way of keeping players happy, and you don't want to push them. And which is why Miami, Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, the organization general say, we are not for everybody. And you're absolutely right. The reputation is well earned. Sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. I think with a player like LeBron James, didn't want to hear that sort of talk. He does so much of the work on his own that he didn't want the organization babysitting him to some degree. And so he kind of badmouth the team to other players. At least this is what I've heard. If that's the case, you know, I understand that perspective also, but I also think that he was the best player. He was at the best point of his career while he was with the Miami Heat, and they got the best version of him there. So they brought it out of him. They were able to develop that. Even when you're a superstar level player like LeBron, you can still be even better. And I think it's important to just show that as an organization, you're committed to it. From everybody there, you want to be healthy, you want to stand out, you want to continue to develop and grow, and part of that is by getting into the best shape that you possibly can. Heat shape is something serious. And so the next step for me in that inverted pyramid is, you know, Heat culture. Max Strus talked about it in a recent media session, and I think it really matters. You talk to Duncan Robinson, you talk to Tyler Hero in his first season, you talk to Precious, you talk to, of course, Udonis Haslem, you talk to any of those players for a prolonged period of time, and when they talk about the organization and what it's meant to them, Heat culture means something. And it's not just the work ethic, it's not just the determination, the pushing, the next level conditioning, all those things. It's accountability, it's open lines of communication. So much of this means so much. Like, even as reporters, and certainly as fans, like, you tend to overlook these aspects of what makes the Heat so successful. But it is a job for these players. And part of that, just like we would at any job we have, is we want communication. We want to know where we stand. We want to know what we can do to get better. I know that's why I ask for reviews and that's why I ask for comments, because I want to find a way to get better. Well, if I don't get them, then how do I know what I can do? With the Heat, they tell you, look, you're fine at this. You need to work at this. You need to get really, really get working on this. Those things matter. Like, you want to be able to come in as a player and know where you stand. Jimmy Butler talked about his one season in Philadelphia. And that was a team that had high-level talent in Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, other established veterans, an established coach, an established front office. And what did he say? He didn't know who was in charge there. Like, that is insane to me when you think about that a player of Butler's level, who came from the Chicago Bulls franchise that is largely seen as dysfunctional, a Minnesota franchise that has mostly missed the playoffs during the last two decades and has gone through coaches the way you go through underwear. To say that the Sixers were the least or the worst one run team among those three candidates, that's amazing. No wonder he's in love with the Heat culture. It must be like seeing sunshine for the first time after having grown up in a cave. You know, this was the complete opposite of that. And I think that means something. Again, maybe it's not for everybody. Maybe you're self-possessed enough or self-aware enough, or you know what your restrictions and limitations, and you can push yourself much more than everybody else. But for most people, especially even most NBA level athletes, they want to have some idea of where they stand. They need structure. I think that's just common sense, and the Heat provides it in a way that is so important. You know where you stand, you know what you have to do to continue to work and develop, and those things really do matter. The next level there, player empowerment. I think we're starting to see more and more signs of Eric Spoelstra, the person, merging with Eric Spoelstra, the coach, blending the two in a way that's very different than Pat Riley, than other hard-nosed coaches, which isn't to say that he won't push you and you know, get you to that next level and you know, get you to find a level of endurance that maybe you've never had before. But he also is invested and helping you as a person, as a player. Like, I think he's gone through so much now. And this isn't Eric Spoelstra, the video coordinator, anymore. This isn't Eric Spoelstra, the guy who has to deal with LeBron James. He's been through all this. I think last year really helped to some degree because he went through so much personally, was there with his players, was able to take him to that next level in the NBA Finals. It really showed how good he is from an X's and O's standpoint, but also in managing and working with personalities. And for him to develop a strong relationship with Jimmy after just one season, that has to really stand out to players around the league. I would get the feeling, and it's impossible to interview hundreds of players, but I think that if you look around the league, you would probably talk about Eric Spoelstra the way that people used to talk about Greg Popovich to some degree. Like, that you want to play for a guy like Spo because you know, again, where you stand with him. You want to have those open lines of communication. You have coaches. You know, Mark Jackson is probably the most notable example of this, but a guy who, well, Jason Kidd, sorry, I'm forgetting the other most notable example. You know, a guy who has probably sown dissension in his own players in order to find a way to determine who will stand out and who will come to and rise to the occasion. I've never really appreciated that. Yes, Spoelstra has often talked about wanting to inject, not anarchy, but, you know, some kind of, you have to break things up for the purpose of enforcing change. You want to be able to do things differently sometimes in order to make players find a way to stand out and be better. But not like that. Like, again, you're working with these people all the time. You are part of an NBA family, you know, as a team, as a limited brotherhood. I don't think you can afford to have those kind of dysfunctional relationships. And I, you know, Kidd and Mark Jackson both notably had people within the coaching ranks and talk badly about players. Like the Mark Jackson situation with Festus Ezeli, that is one that really stands out to me. Like, I can't imagine a world where Eric Spoelstra would put a player like that on the spot and just embarrass him and humiliate him. Like, that's not to say that he's been perfect. This is Spoelstra we're talking about. He did not manage the Dion Waiters situation well, although, you know, maybe there was some inkling there that he probably expected more from Dion, and Dion wasn't able to bounce back. I don't know. There's a lot going on there. it's difficult to really find a common ground for those two. But as far as I'd like to see that relationship mended also. I know that Deion's probably on his way out of the league. I hope that he can come back humbled at some point down the road and find a way to thrive here, because I think this was a place where he was probably happiest, you know, in between his short career with the Lakers and Oklahoma City before he joined Miami. And of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers, when they drafted him to play alongside Kyrie Irving, Deion just was never able to find any kind of footing. And I think he had a taste of it in Miami. The next step for me, aside from, again, the coaching staff and everybody else, finding a way to empower you and to continue to encourage you to reach that next level in your development, is finding what you're good at. This was something that the San Antonio Spurs were long recognized for. Popovich, that coaching staff, they were taking veteran players, guys that maybe were on their way out of the league. Guys like Boris Diaw. When you remember, I think if you watch the Heat lose in 2014 NBA Finals, you recognize that Boris Diaw was an impactful player. But they got everybody to lean into their strengths. Whether it's a guy like David Lee, who you know, was an NBA, not journeyman exactly, he was a former All-Star, but he had been around and he just wasn't finding a place. And then somehow he winds up thriving in San Antonio. Diaw is a good example. Danny Green's a great example of that. I think it's so important to find where your strengths are as a player and to find a way to maximize those. And for the Heat, they've done a really good job. And I think shooting is particularly one way of doing it, but I think defensively is the other way that kind of gravitates mostly towards Miami's ethos. They're looking for shooters. They're looking for hard-nosed defenders. If you can find your way onto one of those ends of the spectrum, there's a good chance you'll find a way to stick around in Miami, because they'll say, you know what, he's just a bulldog defender. You're not going to be able to get past him. You're going to find a way to carve out some playing time for those players. And if you can shoot the ball, well, hell, there's no way of stopping you. I mean, that's just – I'm listening to Eric Reed and John Crotty, and this isn't a knock on them, because you hear the same thing from the Toronto broadcasters too. They're talking about 3-point shooting, and you can almost hear the longing in their voice for post play and things of that sort, where you have a 7-footer clogging the lane. And it's just weird to me that you wouldn't want that 3-point activity. You know, Eric Reed said something to the effect of, oh, and that 3-point shot is here to stay, or 3-point shooting is here to stay. It's like, yeah, no kidding. It's what makes this game so much more dynamic. It's not erasing post play. It's just making things a little different. It's opening up the floor for other players to do different things. And I think as a 7-footer, if you can space the floor, well, why not? When you find shooting the way you can in a Strus or a Robinson or an Ellington, yeah, you can lean into that strength. We've already heard stories about how Spoelstra has given Robinson the ultimate green light and gets pissed off when he doesn't take advantage. I imagine Strus is probably next. Okpala is certainly there as well. And I think this is, you know, it's a good way of building players. If you can find something they're really good at, again, shooting, defense in particular, then you're going to find a way to stand out. Because the other examples, again, if you're a solid passer, well, you're not going to get a lot of opportunity to showcase that skill, because the ball is going to be in Jimmy Butler's hands. The ball is going to be in Tyler Hero's or Goran Dragic's hands or Bam Adebayo's. You know, if you're a player trying to prove your, you know, way onto the league, then, you know, showing your ball handling skills isn't really going to stand out. Shooting, defense, those things will always be highly desirable skills. Lastly, and I think this one falls on the player, is to find a way to stand out. They're all capable. They're all confident. You don't get to this level and go through the process they do, standing out in AAU, dominating high schools around your local city or whatever, you know, playing in multiple high schools in some cases. I'm looking at you, Michael Beasley. You know, and then going on to college for 1 year or 4 years or somewhere in between, standing out in China, standing out in the G League, anywhere you play this game, these players have or should have a high level of respect and confidence, no doubt. But they also need to go above and beyond that. They need to be able to find a way to stand out. And so that's on them. And so there's only so much you can do as an organization. You're kind of setting them up. You kind of think of it, now that I'm talking about it, you kind of think of it a little bit about like parenting. Like, my job as a parent is to prepare my child for the world in the best way that I possibly can, to teach them everything I possibly can in the hopes that when they're, you know, when there are individuals that are going to be trying to do things on their own, that they'll be capable of doing it, that they won't be overwhelmed by what life and society presents for them. And so I have to give my son as much information as possible. I have to be able to teach him how to work and to be determined and to find ways of achieving success and happiness. You know, those things will matter. And so I think it's a lot like that in the Heat as well. I think you're trying to get a player to be happy, to be developed, to find success, whether here or elsewhere. I think for a guy like Spo at this point in his career, he's probably legitimately happy when a player that they kind of were able to inject new life into find success elsewhere. You know, of course you want him to be part of Heat culture forever. You want him to be part of this family forever. But I think if you find a way to stand out, you've shown that you belong. And that means something to this organization. And the players have to take ownership of that. This is the last step of this pyramid. They need to be able to find a way to say they take all the lessons that they've learned from Spo, the development coaches, everybody in this organization, even veterans, because even a guy like Strus has already talked about getting lessons from, you know, Goran and Jimmy and Bam and everybody else, even though he might be older than Bam Adebayo. It's so important to be able to pick their brains a little bit about finding ways to incorporate their successes and make them into your own. And so it's great to see when players find a way to take all those lessons and incorporate them and succeed as a result. So it's been an encouraging couple of days here, I think, for the Heat and for some of the players on this roster. I think we're starting to see that they are fully engaged and ready for the 2020-2021 season. I would expect them to be as good or better than they were last year. But we're just days away from the start of that regular season. And this week, the Locked On NBA podcast is continuing to preview every team division by division. Get intel on each team, fantasy basketball, rookie projections, and predictions on each division. So subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get a podcast. Remember to get your team every day by just asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat as soon as you get in your car. Stay tuned for my interview with Kelly Olynyk coming up in just a couple of days. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support.